Keeper of My Heart. A young lady named Leilani Clark does that song for. She has her music ministry cranking out songs and music with her family in Central Florida. Talked to her one time, and but unfortunately, her dad was, it was a young family, too. She was, what, 19, I think, then. This is 5-6 years ago. And she lost her father in a car accident, and he was the producer behind her music. I'm wondering how she's doing. I should get back in touch with Leilani. We're joined by a different Clark today, Dr. Don Clark, who is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. He's a biochemist, the only biochemist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio. And I wonder, should we be hiring an assistant for you or something, Don? Do you need help over in your science department there?
Somebody to pull weeds.
I need a researcher to research all these topics.
Yeah, and
we talk about.
And we got to get you a lab coat too, because I know it's radio, but you'd sound so much more officious in a lab coat. Probably, I'm thinking that anyway.
Oh well, yeah, especially if you start recording the videos, we'll definitely need the lab coat.
Well, Yeah, well,
I've got over in the winery. I've got test tubes and various lab equipment.
We could set up a whole background for you there, so that at least we could. Do you have some old lab coats? I mean, did you ever wear a lab coat?
Oh, of course, course I did. Yes.
So it's standard. It's like some people wear coat and ties, and scientists wear lab coats. So
yeah, I definitely wore lab coats in college, of course, and then in graduate school and. And in some of the labs I worked in, we definitely had lab coats.
Is there a reason they're all white? Is that so you can see when you spill stuff on your sleeve or something that might burn you? why are they white? Why not a little more colorful?
why not black?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's because you would like to keep it as clean as possible.
Okay, you want the appearance of being antiseptic then.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I got you.
I like the idea that you didn't spill your lunch on it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because that could interfere with the experiment.
Yeah, that would mean you'd have to have several lab coats, though, handy. Yeah. Yeah. So that you could change in a flash here.
How this experiment goes with
me. Yes, some of my lab coats actually had holes in them because I spilled acid on them.
Well, those must all represent memories to you now, though. As you look through your closet, I remember this lab coat. That's when I spilt that vial of green goo on my, that would be a good reminder. Don, one of the things I've noticed about our conversations, whenever the conversation has to do with something very, very tiny, teeny tiny, it gets more and more complex. And I think our subject matter today is following suit. We're going to talk this morning about what I'm calling the Shepherd Cell. Did I read that name or did I make that up? I don't remember. But scientists not known for a lot of imagination. They call it P53. Now, I don't know what that means, whether there was a P-52 that was filed away for future reference, and then this one came along, so it became P-53. How do they do that, Don? Do you know?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. Yes.
How do they name it?
It was given its name because when it was first discovered, they isolated a protein, hence the name P.
Okay, the letter P.
They were very, very creative with the name because the 53 refers to its molecular weight or the size of the protein. So it was 53 kilodaltons in size. So they called it, hey, this is P53. Okay. Actually, they originally called it tumor P53 because whenever they looked at cancerous cells initially, they saw a lot of this protein. And so they thought that this was being generated because of the tumor, and it was actually stimulating the tumor. But that hypothesis turned out to be completely wrong.
Well, I'm looking at this is an article in the magazine Behemoth. It's an online magazine distributed through Christianity Today. And every month they have an interesting science topic, and this one really caught my eye, because what they're talking about is how this P53 cell, this shepherd cell, I'll call it, in their words, creates a biological moment of reflection and assesses whether or not the cell is ready to proceed with further growth and multiplication. Does this refer to thinking or chemical programming?
Oh no, this is very, very sophisticated chemical programming for sure. Mm-hmm. And the P53, as we said, is a protein. It's a very very interesting protein because there's more than one isoform. Now, what's an isoform? It's different proteins that come from the same genome. Some of them, have different sizes. Some of them, instead of being 53 kilodaltons, are actually in the 20s. But they're all called P53, and they're all related because they all kind of function and do the same job.
But all created by design. I mean, with a plan,
it was
each.
There from the absolutely very beginning, and it's absolutely needed to keep our cells in check, really, is what the protein is for, and to allow repair of any, especially DNA damage to our cells. So let's look at a scenario. Suppose you are out you go out later today and you get exposed to too much sun there in Minnesota.
Yeah, and, unlikely.
unlikely. Yeah. Anyway, you
then have all that vitamin D floating around then, like we talked about last week. Yeah.
Yeah, you need vitamin D to help, protect you from any damage. Now, it's interesting because when you said that, it triggered into my mind, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we ultimately find out that vitamin D interacts with this protein somehow.
Well, because vitamin D, as you explained last week, affects the cell walls, keeping them flexible, which helps our whole body stay more mobile and working smoothly. It's kind of a lubricant.
Well, and if you remember from your biology, of course, there's a nuclear cell wall as well. So we got a cell wall within it. We got cell walls within cell walls, mm-hmm. And of course, the nuclear cell wall is where the DNA resides. And P53 is a protein that attaches itself to DNA under certain conditions. So the cell is continually making this protein P53, and most of the protein is inactive and stays inactive until you get DNA damage. So you go out in the sun and you get some DNA damage to your skin cells, and P53 is activated by a cascade of reactions inside the cell. And ultimately, the P53 is the N-terminal end of this particular protein is phosphorylated. That prevents binding of a kind of a suppressor protein, if you will, to P53. And then that allows for a conformational change in the protein, so the protein changes shape, which then allows it to bind to DNA in certain locations. Now, we know that cell division is going on, constantly in our bodies, and our cells need to be replenished and replaced. What happens in this scenario is that the cell is signaling and using P53 to stop the cell division. And it stops it long enough until whatever DNA damage had occurred from the UV exposure is repaired. So the cell repairs itself, then P53, it doesn't think, but other molecules come into play, other proteins come into play. The P53 is shepherded out of the nucleus into the cytosol, where it eventually gets broken down. So the cell division can start again. So P53 halts the cell division in response to stress on the cell. Mm-hmm. So that stress could come in forms of a virus that's attacking the cell. So when you, get the influenza virus, for example, if you looked at the cell, you would see a high concentration of P53. Well, there's a high concentration of P53 because the cell is saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't want to make virus particles. I want to, survive. And So it, you know, it pumps out more P53. P53 is activated. That's already there. And the cell, you know, stops dividing in hopes of the virus not taking over. Well, of course, if you have a high enough concentration of virus, the virus is going to take over certain cells.
Now, the virus itself speeds up division in order to reproduce more of itself in your body.
That's, well, so it takes, you know, most viruses actually go inside the target cell. Mm-hmm. And it incorporates itself into the DNA and then starts the DNA, you know, is doing its normal function, mm-hmm. making proteins, and in this case it's making more viral particles.
But it accelerates it and it behaves much like a cancer would.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And some viruses actually induce cancer.
Hmm.
And, you know, some viruses are targeted to P53 because it's got to turn off the P53 genome. The gene, it's got to turn that off if it wants to be successful in reproducing itself.
Well, this is so incredible to think that this is happening all day, every day inside of our bodies by design. I misnamed it. It's not a shepherd cell. It's a shepherd protein. But what is a protein? Is it a liquid? Is there just molecules?
It's a very long chain molecule, okay. And we've got, you know, thousands of proteins in our cells.
Mm-hmm.
Proteins can be structural, that is, they can be scaffolding within the cell. You know, when Darwin was, looking through a microscope, the microscopes were just light microscopes, and all you could see is it looked like just, they could see the cell wall, they could see the nucleus, they could see some particles within, some bodies within the cell, but everything else just looked like a soup, and hence the idea that we came from a primordial soup. Mm-hmm. That's a completely incorrect picture of the cell. The cell is highly organized. The cell has structural proteins like actin, for example, which are like rods, and these rods are actually can link themselves together during cell division and literally pull the cell apart. And it's because of that particular protein and that we even have cell division. There are other globular proteins, for example, that make up hemoglobin. The myoglobin protein looks pretty much like a ball, except that it has iron inside. Which, of course, can carry oxygen. Mm-hmm. There are other types of globular proteins that are enzymes that can either build up or tear down. For example, there are proteases, and proteases are enzymes that actually break up other proteins. Kinases are proteins that phosphorylate proteins, as in the case with P53. So there are specific kinase proteins that are targeted towards P53 and get triggered when P53 needs to be activated.
Mm-hmm. So P53 is a defender in our system. It's a protein that helps protect us against unhealthy growth of certain kinds of cells, including viruses and cancer cells.
When you have a cancer, the DNA, of course, has gone amok, and so in most cancers, they have found that P53 can be mutated and doesn't function properly. So it's not that you're not making enough P53 to suppress and to kill the cancerous cell. It's just it's not functioning. There's plenty being made, but it's just not functioning and doing its job to suppress that particular cell, which would ordinarily, of course, you know, would ordinarily be undergo apoptosis. A high enough concentration. Interestingly enough, we were talking about apoptosis a couple of weeks ago.
Remember the word, yeah.
And which is automatic cell death. P53 is involved in that. If its concentration gets high enough and says, look, I can't stop this process. I can't, you know, the cell's not repairing itself to a satisfactory level. The concentrations of P53 get high, and the cell decides, well, okay, it's time for me to kind of self-destruct. And that's exactly what happens. So this is a very, very interesting molecule, and there's cascades all in the cell to make P53, different types of P53, depending on different types of conditions, to activate, to deactivate, to, you know, chew up, you know, P53. And this is only one, in quote, simple process that we've been studying since this 1979, when P53 was first discovered.
But it's interesting how we could only describe the process by anthropomorphizing these cells, giving them, representing them like they're thinking, like they're making logical decisions in order to accomplish an assigned mission. And I think on some level, that's an accurate thing to do, because I'm thinking that all this reflects, I can't help but think, that this all reflects the intelligence, the wisdom of the designer. It's doing the designer's will, the job just as assigned.
Well, exactly right. I mean, it's just like, you know, you've got a colony of ants, and the colony sends out scouts to search, for example, for food, and if it runs into something that's going to harm the ants, then the scouting ant actually marks the place not to go. Mm-hmm. So don't go there. But it leaves a trail to where the food is, and then the other ants can follow the chemical signal, if you will, to the food source. And then so the colony of ants acts in many cases like you know, a cell that is responding to different types of stimuli, you know, around it. Yeah, this P53 is very much involved with all kinds of control mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, if your P53 gets injured, or if you have a mutated P53, you have a higher probability of getting cancer, especially in your young adult life.
I'm still looking for a way that I can frame this thing. This describes this article, which, by the way, we will provide a link to in the podcast of this conversation with Dr. Don. We'll have a link in the podcast in a couple hours if you want to review that article yourself. But you can find it at ChristianityToday.com. It's their behemoth publication for this month. This article describes a system that behaves rationally, but not by using brains, but by using chemicals. Somewhere there's a link. There's got to be an instruction somehow that we can discover within the human body that governs all this. And it might not be physical. I wonder if it's spiritual. An interface with the spirit that somehow provides the intelligence for this to happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, we can certainly.
I know that's a little metaphysical, but I'm
sure
I'm groping. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's an interesting question, because obviously there's all kinds of communication going on between certainly intercellular communication. And so one cell that's connected to another cell, and we know that there's all kinds of communication between those cells.
And just to get specific, again, communication would be an exchange of information. An exchange of information from one kind to another kind.
Yeah, and this exchange, for example, is... I mean, we can look at it biochemically, and it could be, you know, it's chemical. Mm-hmm. Well, our nervous system is chemical. Yes, it sends, in quote, an electrical impulse, but all of that is a chemical process that allows, for example, potassium and sodium to be exchanged in the nerve cells. And that gets transmitted as a chemical, as a electrical impulse. So, you know, when you look deep enough and far enough, it's all type of chemical. But we know, for example, that we have the ability God created within us, the ability to communicate with Him and Him with us, and of course, through that ability comes the ability for other spiritual beings, the not-so-friendly angels, for example, which we call demons, to communicate with us as well. And that does have a an influence, you know, on our bodies, whether it be, you know, causing arthritis, or you know, us being depressed, or you know, which is, you know, we can definitely see that, you know, in the individual, or you know, if we're at peace, and if we're in you know, if we're in constant communication, you know, with God, then our bodies tend to be a lot more healthier. And you can fight off a lot more infections, you know, they're found if you indeed are at peace. But if you're in fear, then that triggers all kinds of chemical responses within your body, and it makes you more susceptible to disease. And if, you know, obviously, if you are in, God allowed our bodies to respond to fear as a protective mechanism, but it wasn't, our bodies are not designed to sustain a constant bombardment of fear, which causes all kinds of immunal responses. For example, you can have your immune system start attacking your own cells. Which we call autoimmune diseases. And so...
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I want to grab it here before it goes by, because this again, is metaphysical. I mean, it's somewhere between spirit and physics. But if we're not meant to exist in a constant state of fear, the fact that some of us do suggests... I mean, and I'm thinking of events in the Middle East, things that people do to other people, some of the awful things going on in the world today that create a constant state of fear... It's unnatural, which means it's prompted by an enemy. I mean, it's linked to that kind of causation.
Yes, and of course we know the, you know, we don't, we're not to respond to, you know, that God didn't give us a spirit of fear. Well, it's interesting that that verse actually says spirit. Because there is a specific spirit that is involved with stimulating your fear receptors, if you will, in your mind and in other parts of your body to respond, you know, to respond to to fear. But he gave us a sound mind. He gave us power, you know, and he gave us peace. Those are the things that come from God. And you know, we are designed. We were originally designed to live in peace, with God. And of course, when we reject God, then we expose ourselves to all kinds of other, you know, spiritual attacks. And one of those happens to be fear. You know, another one, as I talked about before, is depression. It's, you know, I don't feel good about myself, and I don't feel good to the point where, you know, what's the purpose in life? Well, God gave us a purpose. And of course, we know that once we understand what our purpose is in life, then we can live in peace, and we can live with the joy and hope that and purpose in you know, driving us forward in a positive way, as opposed to our enemy who wants to drive us, you know, backwards and actually, you know, wants to kill us. And our bodies respond to that, and if we get enough stimulus on the negative side, we actually wind up dying faster than we were supposed to.
Yeah, and I think of some of the provisions God has made to protect us from that. For example, a Sabbath rest, festival times. All this Old Testament stuff starts to come into focus when you understand that he is acting for our benefit and our protection in all these things. Now, that's kind of taking this article about P53 and mushrooming up to the big picture. We can be equally amazed when we go in the other direction. This is what astounds me, is that the smaller things seem to get, the more complicated they seem to get. And we develop tools, so now we can look at things on the atomic level. We discover more and more stuff down there, doing more and more complex things and interactions. That seems counterintuitive.
Well, it does. You'd think that, well, you know, I'm gonna break this problem down into smaller pieces, but the more you look, the more you find, and the more you say, wow, you know, this is a, you know, marvelous piece of machinery, so complex that we couldn't even build anything, you know, anything close to it. About as sophisticated as we can get is, well, we figured out, you know, how to cut the DNA, for example, and then to splice in other genes, if you will, into mm-hmm. DNA, and we call that gene manipulation, mm-hmm. and then we can have the animal or the bacteria or whatever make other proteins that we're interested in. And this is how, for example, insulin is made today. We don't necessarily need to isolate it from an animal, but we can do it through genetic engineering, and have done it through genetic engineering, and make as much of it as we want through fermentation or through growing up bacteria, then isolating the protein of interest. So, you know, but that's just about as far as we can go. I mean, we haven't been able to build a cell, and we certainly haven't been able to build a cell from scratch because, you know, we don't have the chemical ability to make not only specific molecules. I mean, we can make a small chemical molecule, but it's not going to have the right chirality. That is, it's going to be a mixture of, for example, you know, right-handed and left-handed ness. So it's not going to be specific enough. Even just a simple organic molecule is not going to be specific enough. That you know, the creator has already designed the whole system to make whatever molecules or proteins or, you know, other, you know, type of things that the cell uses in order to survive and stay healthy.
It's amazing in its complexity. And I look at this chemical programming, and I see, I can't help but see it reflected in the way we program computers, the way we write software. It's lines and lines of logical commands, thousands of them, to accomplish a specific task. The pattern is really very similar in writing software, and then observing the behavior of things like P53. So it's just so amazing. This whole thing called life is absolutely astounding, and we marvel at it weekly with you, Dr. Don. I want to thank you for it. Before I wrap up, though, I better go to David, because, you know, I'm in the habit of wrapping up.
But David may have some questions.
Tie a neat ribbon around the conversation.
Who,
then David says,
me?
But wait.
What? David, see, when I'm gone, you get Dr. Don to yourself.
That's true. And,
yeah. You know, you don't have to look at that screen and look and see. Well, I see. The little vein in Dave's head, is it going off again?
Yeah, it's amazing how it smoothly things tend to go then, too. You know.
Really.
But I'll give you a chance here, David, if you would like to fire off a question.
I was thinking while you guys were talking and sharing about the complexity of all of it. Now, the P53 has been identified, and I assume it's been isolated. I don't know if it has or not. But does this expand, or did this expand the role of genetic engineering itself? I mean, is there a way to, you know, snip a P53 over here and then add it to an I-14 and then maybe a B-12? And, you know, I kind of... You know, much like the genetic engineering for livestock, or for organisms, for crops, to make crops grow in the desert easily or better.
Genetic engineering, we're talking about.
Yeah, right. Genetic engineering. Did this advance it? I would think it would.
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, it's since it was first discovered in cancer research, and they thought it was an enemy, it now turns out to be the hero of keeping cancer under control. there's been a lot of research and says, okay, well, we got to get more P53 in the cell. Mm. And so some thinking has been, well, we'll just inundate the cell with P53. Well, you can't really do that uncontrolled because if you overpower a cell with P53, guess what the cell's going to do? It's going to say, oops, I'm supposed to die. Well, that didn't help you very much.
No,
it helps you with the cancer cell, but it doesn't
help
the
oops
normal
factor.
Cells.
Yeah,
that would be bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, some Chinese have been, done some experiments where they are taking a virus that obviously infects the cell and a certain type of virus that doesn't, you know, do a lot of damage, attached to the P53 a gene to it, and those cells that have abnormal P53 or mutated P53, they've been able to make them behave normally instead of going rogue. So, yeah, some genetic genetic research and genetic manipulation, excuse me, has been done in this area, but it's extremely complicated because of the cascade of molecules and proteins that are involved in the whole process and the whole control of P53 and control of other proteins that are, you know, involved in this. So some, you know, minor steps, or some would say even major steps, have taken place, but we're not there yet. But to be able to somehow, you know, correct a defective P53 would be beneficial to those people who have a mutated P53.
Mm-hmm. Well, the
amazing thing to me is that this information is just, you know, it's got me sitting here with my mouth half open. And, you know, that's not just because Jim won't let me ask a question. It is just amazing stuff. And it's 36 years old. I mean, it's not stuff that was discovered this morning. And now my mind says, so what did they discover this morning? I mean, wow. And we have, it sounds like we haven't even scraped the top of the barrel, much less the bottom of the sides.
Keeping up with all the research is a huge task. It's a full-time occupation, just gathering information like this and relaying it to people. So this is not a simple thing, and the knowledge kind of dawns on us slowly, because it has taken us this long. Knowing that P53 exists, we had it categorized wrong. We thought it was a bad guy all those years. And now, as the article says, from villain to hero. Inside the Protein That Ponders, story of P53. We'll link to that in our podcast a little bit later on. It'll be up on our Broken Road website. Don, nice work this morning. You helped explain some very complex things. We appreciate it, and we just enjoy having you with us. Thank you for dropping by.
Well, glad to be of assistance, and yeah, I got to sometimes digest some of this material before we can talk about it and then convert it into layman's terms.
You know, I wonder if it would be helpful to have a test tube on the desk there in front of you. I mean, just to kind of orient our thinking, you know, along the lines of, you know, test tubes and things. Maybe not.
Well, if I could go over to the winery lab. Then yeah, that would put me in the mood, you know.
Yeah,
better, because I would, you know, be, and then of course, as we talked about initially, putting the lab coat on would just, you know,
it would top it off. Yes, that would be the cherry on top.
I hear the music playing, but you know, I've got.
Yeah, but you're ignoring
question.
It, aren't you? Yeah,
but okay. I'm trying to ignore it as best
yes,
I can.
Yes, you are. Okay.
Is there some way to use P53 in the lab, in your lab, with wine?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. and what kind of flavor would it have?
Yeah. Dr. Don Clark, biochemist, member of the Board of Creation Moments, and I want to recommend to you the Creation Moments website. That's creationmoments.com. There's a wealth of resources there for your own studies, and it talks about the science, mind you, not propaganda, science that supports a young earth creationist position. I think you'll find it fascinating. A visit to creationmoments.com. Don, take care. We'll see you next week.
Very good. Y'all have a great week as well, and don't freeze.
Yeah, we'll do our, well, we're good at not freezing up here.
We'll keep moving. Thanks, Don.
Yeah, keep moving.